Now it's time for Very Serious Football Talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. There was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
As usual, whenever we talk with Seth Kaiser here on a Tuesday on ESPN Kansas City, I like to get right into the biggest story of the day. And usually that's a very, very serious football topic. And I would say it pretty much is today. Seth, I need a judgment question. If you found a sarcophagus buried in Egypt somewhere, would you open it or would you bury it and pretend you'd never seen it?
I saw that you shared that. Well, for the serious answer, I would say that I'm not a believer in curses, hexes, and the like.
Sure.
And so I wouldn't mind opening it. But, I mean, you just never know with the history of the world what's really been out there mm-hmm. and what really might be in there. And so, actually, no, the more I think about it, now I wouldn't open it. I'd watch someone else open it. Like, you know, like on a video camera from the next room, I'd be like, yeah, you go nuts. You know, who knows what kind of weaponized, you know, Egyptian anthrax they put in there.
Right.
Just in case someone opened it. I mean, I think there's very real things to worry about. Never mind. I mean, I saw the mummy in The Mummy Returns. I didn't see the third one, but I assume it was similar.
Yeah, I did. I had a definite fear of mummies whenever I was young enough and those movies were coming out. So I've never seen any of the mummy movies, and that's totally fine with me.
But, well, you were like two when the first one
came
out.
Yeah, right. The first, well, honestly, I'm wondering what year the first one came out.
Don't check on that. You already make me feel ancient sometimes. Please don't check that.
Oh, hey, no, don't worry about it. I was only four or five.
Oh, Lord.
But Beards was gesticulating wildly as you were saying you would watch someone else open it. That's a good point, because I'm not afraid of there being an undead being in the sarcophagus. But the Egyptians had some crazy stuff going on. They absolutely could have that, like, spring-loaded with a bunch of knives or something and tear my head right off.
Yeah, people were pretty wild back in the day. There was a group of people who, I mean, like, what they did for sport was they brought their enemies to the city gates and skinned them alive. I mean, people didn't mess around back then.
Also, this show would have been so much better in Egyptian times.
The stakes would have been higher.
100%. 100%.
I did not enjoy that bit. No! You know, and then
also,
more sports with you guy who's not Josh Briscoe. Josh Briscoe's no longer with us.
They're not using his head to play soccer. It's crazy. It's wow. This is...
Exactly.
Is he still talking? How is that even possible?
Yeah. Somehow we're not surprised, but it happened.
I'm doing the only decapitated show in the history of ancient Egyptian radio.
There you go. I like it.
That's a wow. That is a tagline too. Like that's fantastic. All right, Seth, you've written a couple new things on The Athletic, and not to, you know, just force you straight into this chiefy box. Yes. Although I saw somebody on Twitter was just I feel like the general responses I get from our conversations are either people who are just like, this is the best thing that anyone does, or they're like, yeah, this is great after I get through the first 12 minutes of you guys talking about absolutely nothing.
I've had both as well. It really is a one or the other. There's no middle ground there. No. I haven't yet to have someone be like, yeah, I'm okay with the non-football part. It's been like either, hey, man says it's hilarious. I feel like I'm getting to know you. Mm-hmm. And like, all this stuff. Or it's like, Seth, I literally could not care less about your family. Talk about football. And yep. I'm like, oh, that's nice.
Yep. And listen, I mean, everybody who clicks helps pay the bills or whatever. That's fine. I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate all of them. So.
Honestly, you can be honest now. No one who doesn't like the nonsense is listening anymore at this point. They can all go straight to hell, all of them. You can say that. They're not listening. You can just
I'm going to go ahead and let you just ride that pony, my friend.
They should all be launched to the moon. They can create their own planet where there is no nonsense allowed.
You would have fit right in with those ancient cultures. I'm telling you, man.
I feel like I missed my window. I hate it whenever people go like, I feel like I was born in the wrong generation. Because, like, every generation before us had, like, cholera. Like, you get far enough back, like, I was born in the wrong.
Every generation before us had cholera.
Like, largely true. Every kid had measles. Like, I wish I was. I just feel like I would have really been a better fit in the 1800s. No, you don't. You would have had your leg amputated whenever you had a cold for some reason. They would have drilled into your head to get your demons to go away.
You know, on a side note, that's the real reason they created Oregon Trail, to let people realize that you would die.
Yeah, like, of course.
You can't even survive the computer simulation.
Right.
That's how you know. That's the same reason people should really know since we're putting off the Chiefs talk, that's the same way everyone should know that they wouldn't survive the zombie apocalypse. They can't even beat the game.
Right. Yes, of course.
But yeah, anyway, about the Chiefs.
Yeah, okay, so actually, I want to talk about the two things you've written this week, and then also a question from the comments here about the Chiefs quarterback situation, so I think we can get through all three of these things here. But the series that you just started, it's a two-parter, so series used liberally, but it's a two-part series, and I really enjoyed reading this one about the perfect marriage between Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, and I was wondering if you just would unpack a little bit of this first part of it for us, what you were looking into, the logic behind it, and then what you shared with everybody in this first part.
Absolutely, and as you indicated, you know, this is something people can find on The Athletic if they're interested. So I was just sitting there, as I probably spend 90% of my spare time doing, just pondering the existence of Patrick Mahomes.
I get it.
Honestly, if I'm not working or hanging out with my kids, I'm thinking about Patrick Mahomes. It's really reached a rough point. You notice I didn't include my wife in that. She's not thrilled with the whole deal. Yeah. If she ever meets Patrick Mahomes, she's not going to be happy with him. Anyway, so I was thinking about how right after the draft, a bunch of people were sitting there saying, man, he just took the anti-Alex Smith.
Yeah.
He took the guy as unlike Alex as possible. And so here's... This all goes back to a theory I have about Alex Smith and Andy Reid as a duo. Mm-hmm. People talk about the fact that Alex Smith is the perfect quarterback for Andy Reid because Andy Reid loves his systems and he loves having control, and Alex Smith will always, always, always execute the plan.
Right.
It's arguably his greatest strength as a quarterback is he's capable of executing the plan exactly the way it's drawn up, and reading defenses. That's his thing. That's what he's made a very good career out of.
Yep.
And so with Andy Reid, he, generally speaking, has a great plan to execute. So it's a perfect marriage. But one thing I've noticed is that when things go a little wrong, when teams maybe throw something at Andy that he's not ready for, which is rare because he's a good coach, but mm-hmm. it happens. Sure. Like Mike Tomlin's had his number for years.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens, it seems like Reid has a tendency, from what I can see, to, when things are going wrong a little bit, when they're snowballing, to tighten up a little bit, get a little more conservative with mm-hmm. the play calling. Not nearly as bad as I think the narrative is,
mm-hmm.
but it does happen. He kind of might call a few more cutesy plays, might call a few more plays where there's one read. You know, he really tries to assert control over the offense. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work, that just makes things worse, right?
Yeah.
So now enter Alex Smith, who will execute that plan, whether it succeeds or fails, to a T. And Alex is also a guy who, when things are going well for the offense, man, he can really, and we saw it last year.
Yes.
When things were humming on the offense, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
But when things go wrong, he is not really a guy that's going to ad-lib the offense into success. Now, he did it occasionally, and he's a gamer, and he's a tough guy. But he's just – that's not his gift.
Sure.
And I was just thinking about those two things. They tend to kind of go off one another, and you get something that's exponentially worse when things are going wrong. Mm-hmm. Because you've got a coach – who is over-controlling when things are going wrong, and a quarterback who is going to follow that over-controlling plan even if it's not working. And so you have two guys who maybe on their own it wouldn't be good, it would be kind of a weakness, but when you combine them, it's a huge weakness. Mm-hmm. Enter Patrick Mahomes. So you go ahead and list a few of Patrick Mahomes' strengths for me. We're going to do a pop quiz and see if we can figure this out here.
Fashion sense, handsomeness. Yes. Can throw the ball 80 yards at in one fell swoop.
those are you were 2 out of 3. I don't care about the football. a big thing with Mahomes that you saw time after time in college is not just a huge arm, but his ability to ad lib.
Yes.
And he had to his last year in college because that line was awful.
And again, to give you a plug now so you don't have to do it yourself, go look at The Athletic. Go subscribe to The Athletic and then look at the GIFs, I guess, video, whatever. Look at the clips that Seth put in on this one. There are some of these plays. The against LSU, I think it's the one against LSU where he just gets, like, absolutely enveloped by a pass rusher and, like, has stalled for 4 or 5 seconds and then finds a little guy in the just crossing across the field, kind of just running
right.
around.
Right. It's a play where the play call, as it was drawn up, fails immediately.
Immediately.
Because of instant pressure.
Two edge rushers. Two of them.
Yep, two edge rushers, and they're both in the passing lane that he was supposed to use.
Yep.
And so the play call is dead, and he ad-libbed it to success. And so here's a bit of a theory I have. Patrick Mahomes, one of his strengths is when everything around him is falling apart, that seems to be when he's at his best.
Yeah.
Like when he gets out of the pocket, things almost get worse for defense. It's kind of like a Russell Wilson or even Aaron Rodgers type thing.
Yep.
Where with most quarterbacks, if you pressure them and they start moving outside the pocket, you're like, oh, yeah. When Rodgers does it, you're like, oh, crap.
Yes,
you know,
of course.
What horrible thing is about to happen? And so I was just thinking – imagine Andy Reid's offense when it's running well. Andy Reid's offense will run well.
Yeah, of course.
Now imagine Andy Reid's offense where when things aren't going so well, there's a player in place who thrives in that situation, who can keep things from snowballing, which, in theory, will keep Andy Reid from tightening up because things won't snowball. And you never have those kind of vicious little circles that we saw with Alex and Andy, say, like, the midseason offensive swoon last year. I'm reviewing Reggie Ragland's film right now, and the Buffalo and Giant games were – the offense was so bad.
It's unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
It was so bad. And I think you saw some of that snowball effect in that Andy and Alex, while they were great when they were good together, their weaknesses kind of – they were exponential.
Yes, 100%.
And I think – Mahomes' particular strength of ad-libbing and helping push things through when everything falls apart should help offset Reed's biggest weakness, which is trusting his system too much. It's like, oh, I got this guy that trusts the system too much. Let's get a guy who colors outside the line.
Yep.
So that way, when the picture isn't working the way it's supposed to, we got a guy who can go above and beyond what the coach called.
And a long-standing opinion of our conversations and of this show is that Andy Reid isn't stupid, right? So that needs to be laid out there. We believe that to a level where I think we can go ahead and have that argument. But the thing about this that I think is something that is the follow-up by the cynic and then can be pushed back on by the optimist in this conversation, for this to actually be true, for everything you just talked about and for everything that you wrote in this article, for it to all be not just true but, I guess, applicable – Andy Reid needs to know that Patrick Mahomes is here to fix some of his own weaknesses. And going back now to the thought that Andy Reid is not an idiot, I don't think Andy Reid is going to be caught off guard by realizing that, oh, Patrick Mahomes can help me in some of the places wherever I need some help as a coach. I think Andy Reid is a proud man and a proud coach for perfectly good reason. But I don't think he's ignorant. And this is because he could have drafted Deshaun Watson. Now, the Deshaun Watson that we saw last year in Houston is not the Deshaun Watson that people were expecting to see coming out of college.
Correct.
He was getting
Correct.
Compared to Alex Smith. If Andy Reid wanted another Alex Smith, he could have had him at the exact same spot, and he took Mahomes, and I think that matters.
And I think you're exactly right. We saw what Deshaun Watson did last year. He demonstrated a lot more individual playmaking ability than people expected.
Yeah.
Because that was my comparison. If you remember, when I was writing about the quarterbacks in that draft, because mm-hmm. I had this feeling they were going to take quarterback, mm-hmm. Mahomes was my favorite. Watson was 1A.
Yep.
And what I wrote was, if Andy Reid wants, like, an Alex Smith 3.0 mm-hmm. with, like, a little more playmaking capability and faster,
yep.
take Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
And then you can get that 10% bump in the offense. If he wants to just rip the lid off the sucker and just, like, go crazy mm-hmm. and see if we can take this offense to a whole new level, take Mahomes. And like you said, he could have just stuck with a guy who was more comfortable executing a system, which is what he did in college, and he did it very well.
Yep.
He could have done that, and he chose not to. And when Reid is being quoted, he's saying, yeah, you know, we want him to work within the system, mm-hmm. but, you know, you see what he does operating outside the system, so you kind of want to encourage that while at the same time making sure he doesn't do too much of it.
Yep.
And that, to me, screams, okay, we want him to work in the system 85% of the time because Andy Reid's system works
mm-hmm. yes.
85% of
sure.
the time. You need Mahomes for that other 20%.
Yep. And I also...
When everything falls apart, you want a guy that can make something happen.
And I also think that our understanding of Andy Reid's system is about to change, if not dramatically, at least enough that we go, oh, this is different, because he's working with Patrick Mahomes' skill set now. Like, I also don't think that that's going to – I don't know why you would imagine that Andy Reid's going to give Patrick Mahomes the exact same playbook and the exact same play calling backbone that he gave to Alex Smith. But that's – I mean, that's another conversation we've had a few times, I guess. But as far as the perfect marriage thing goes, I think that also opens up Andy Reid a little bit more to trust his quarterback with some things that he wouldn't trust Alex Smith with as much, as he trusts Patrick Mahomes less than he does with some things, like the ability to change stuff for the line, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some things that are going to change it's going to take Mahomes a couple of years
sure.
to get that same trust. Now, to be fair, Alex Smith was calling audibles his first year in the system.
Right.
And again, and I understand that he, you know, he was a multiple year pro, but this idea, again, that Andy Reid's offense is the Sphinx riddle that, like,
right.
no one can solve
right.
is absurd.
Yes,
it's just
silly.
Absurd.
Yes.
And so I really, that to me, just, again, when I spent my free time thinking about Mahomes, as I am wont to do, I thought to myself, man, Andy Reid's biggest weakness, in my opinion, is that trusting his system too much.
Mm-hmm.
And by getting Patrick Mahomes, a guy who will absolutely go outside of the system half a dozen to a dozen times a game, he absolutely will. Mm-hmm. By getting that guy, he may have found it, provided they can make sure everything clicks, because the key is showing him the right times, and that's where you got to trust Mahomes to pick his spots
yep.
to go outside the system. Because if that happens, if you've got someone who operates the offense when it's running smoothly and can operate it fine, and can take care of the half dozen plays a game where the offense isn't running smoothly,
mm-hmm.
you're talking about a great, great offense. And I really think this could be, Andy Reid by taking Mahomes, could be that final, okay, I've got to address this problem that I have. And by taking this guy, I can do it.
100% agree. So you can go read that whole article on The Athletic, and then also, do you know when your second part of that's coming out, Seth? Ballpark even?
I plan on releasing that early next week or late this week, depending on my schedule.
Cool.
That is going to be the inverse in how I think Andy Reid as a coach could be the perfect fit to help Mahomes with some of his weaknesses and help him have success immediately, as opposed to the whole, yeah, he'll be really good in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. It's so refreshing to have logical reasons to be optimistic about the Chiefs. It's refreshing and also kind of terrifying and just really bizarre. It's a really bizarre feeling. Because I believe everything that we're saying, and we sound like kooks because we're like, oh yeah, this is perfect and everything is perfect and this offense is going to be perfect, and I believe it. I think
it really is easy to find reasons to be optimistic about the offense, and that doesn't mean there won't be hiccups. There will be. You're going to have some games where the offense maybe struggles a little more. But I think the overall point is, if Mahomes is that guy who can help solve some of the weaknesses Andy Reid has due to his natural playmaking, everyone's talking about the ceiling of the offense being raised. I'd like to see the floor of the offense raised. Because, again, go back and watch those Buffalo and New York games.
Yes. No, I will not. I will not do that.
I want to see the offense's floor get raised to the point that, yeah, they might have an off week, but an off week isn't like a 9-point game.
Right.
An off week. Wouldn't it be great if an off week were 20 points?
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
I would sign up for that. If only you had recently written a film review over someone who maybe the headline indicated that he would be the guy who could raise the floor of the offense. Oh, man, it's right here.
Where would I go to read that?
And then intentionally segued into it. I don't know.
We are a well-oiled machine. Tell us about what you saw from Chris Conley and how Chris Conley raises the floor.
So I went to review Chris Conley's film by popular request. A lot of people want to know. What was interesting to me, this is the second year in a row I've really taken a closer look at him, and I wanted to verify some of the stuff I saw.
Yeah.
Here's a few things. And again, you can find this article on The Athletic. There's going to be a bunch of stuff in there that I'm not going to have time to talk about here, and I'm sorry.
Sorry for making you pay to go see Seth's actual work. You know what? If you demand an apology for that, you can go back to the moon with all those other people I sent to the moon earlier.
All those other people just shot there, right?
I either shot to the moon or to hell. I can't even remember. Pick one.
Yeah, maybe both. I mean, who knows? I don't know how all that works.
Right. But anyway. Maybe hell's on the moon.
Yeah, the outpost of hell on the moon. Anyway, yeah, that theologically probably isn't accurate.
I was going to say, can you stick around for a second segment today so we can break down the theological implications of hell being on the moon?
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
There is.
So Conley, for starters, he lined up all over the field.
Yeah.
Now, he was more often a boundary receiver than he was in the slot. But I've had people ask, oh, do you think Conley could play in the slot? He already did. He was lining up there last year, and it wasn't just like once a game. It was multiple times every game. He also ran a variety of routes. Now, one thing I would say is Conley was often given a not passive role, but he was a guy who was blocking, or
right.
He was the guy who was running the go route to try to free up stuff underneath.
Mm-hmm.
He clearly wasn't the go-to guy, but he was asked to line up everywhere and do every job, because there were some plays where he looked like the number one option. So he clearly knows the offense well. I watched four games, I want to say, and I didn't see a single snap where he looked out of place.
Mm-hmm.
He knows exactly where to be and exactly what to do, and there's value in that.
For sure.
What I will say with Conley is I think a lot of people are kind of waiting to see like that physical freak that showed up at the combine to show up on the field. And I'm just not seeing it. He's got exceptional leaping ability. And once he gets going, he's a strider. And once he gets going, he's got good deep speed. But he is not quick at all. And his routes reflect that. And so he struggles to create separation on his own. Now, because he's got long arms and he's a big-bodied guy, he's got a wide catch radius, he can still win contested catches. But I don't think he is ever going, this breakout year some people are waiting to have, I don't see it. What I see from him is a guy who runs the correct routes. He runs every route hard. Even, there would be stretches where he hadn't seen a target in 20 or 30 snaps, and he was still running every route hard. And he caught pretty much everything that was thrown his way. And there's value in that. Reliable players that are able to win a contested ball. They'll run every route hard, they'll block hard, and they'll catch everything when it's required of them. You're kind of average. We've been kind of waiting for, Conley to, show up and be whatever, when you saw his athletic numbers and his height and all that. It's like, oh, AJ Green. No, he's not A.J. Green.
Right.
I think he's this offense's Jason Avant. I think that's his ceiling. But players like that are important. And so when I talk about raising the floor, he's included in that because losing him, I think, did hurt the floor of the offense because he's a reliable receiver that you can count on third and 10.
Mm-hmm.
And they relied on him a couple times in the games that before he got hurt in those third and long situations to be the guy that they could go to. And so I think having a reliable guy like that is your, and let's face it, in this offense, he's the fourth or fifth option.
Yep.
But I do think that raises the floor of the offense. I see him as a superior option to Albert Wilson because he appeared to run more of a variety of routes.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilson doesn't get separation very well
mm-hmm.
On anything but short routes. And I think Conley can at least win contested catches and can run a greater variety of routes. And so I think having him back should help the offense, not in terms of really raising the ceiling, but maybe raising the floor a little bit to where you've got someone to go to when things are falling apart.
I think there's a bunch of really good nuggets in there that I want to just sort of to run through real quick here. Jason Avant is an interesting comparison because he's a guy that I think that most like serious NFL fans know who Jason Avant is. But in his career, he had 4,000 receiving yards over a decade and 13 right. touchdowns. Like, there's the stats are nothing. He averages right. whatever 400 yards a year, but he had some big moments, and he was always a part of, for most of the part of this time, an Andy Reid offense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that comp makes a lot of sense. Saying that you prefer Chris Conley to Albert Wilson is literally exactly where I was gonna go next. And so that also makes a lot of sense. And then saying that Conley can be a guy who can win at a 50-50 ball or at a point of contention, whatever. Mm-hmm. That seems like something this offense can use, especially because this offense doesn't have a second tight end that I feel very good about. I don't know if there's anything in that realm that interests you, where maybe Conley is kind of playing a split out tight end two kind of role in the red zone or something. I don't know. Is that any sort of feasible?
I wouldn't line him up in that specific role, but he's definitely a guy that you can count on to run a quick slant. He has developed a nice jab step. That's like his go-to move, where he'll use that to cut inside and get some separation. He's a guy you can count on in the red zone to run a little slant and shield the corner
mm-hmm.
from the ball with his body
mm-hmm.
and come down with the ball. And so those are important roles. And in Andy Reid's offense, he tends to scheme guys open. And I think Conley will be the beneficiary of that at times because he knows where to be and he knows
for sure.
what to look for in the coverages. And so I think he'll put together a nice little year, but I don't think he's ever going to be a guy. I could see him having an Avant-like career
mm-hmm.
where, you know, because he was on his way to he had a season like that in 2016, and he was on his way to another season like that in 2017, 500 yards or so, maybe 600 yards. It's some nice third down catches, a guy the fan base likes, but isn't anyone that, like, people outside of Kansas City would have heard much about. And Avant was like that for a lot of his career until he kind of stuck around long enough to where people just remember him because
right.
of longevity.
Right. How did your opinion of Sammy Watkins and the Sammy Watkins signing evolve as you're doing the Chris Conley review?
If it did at all, I guess. I mean, for Watkins, what changed my opinion of that signing was watching Watkins
sure.
from last year
sure.
and seeing how unbelievably explosive he is. And I guess I could say, you know, I wasn't thinking about this when I wrote it, but, like, watching him run routes versus watching Conley run routes, you can see just how explosive
mm-hmm.
and quick and fast Watkins is. Like, he's almost a violent route runner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's impressive to watch. And so, you know, those two, I don't view them as filling out at all similar roles in the offense, just because Watkins is more of an explosive down the field player.
Mm-hmm.
Although he also, I mean, in college, he ran a ton of, like, you know, little screens and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Explosive athletes too. whereas Conley is more your reliable possession guy archetype.
And I don't mean as comparing the two guys together, I guess. My thought is, as I was reading the Conley review, I kept going back mentally to the conversations I was having with people before, you know, towards the end of last season, coming into this off season, and I'm hearing the echoes of people saying, Conley is the number two and this offense is fine. I don't know. I don't think they should invest in another receiver. I think it's this and this and this. So as I was reading your Conley review, for me, I was already on board with the Watkins signing because I was in that place before it happened. But it made me feel even better about that type of aggressive move because it deepens this offense in such a way. And also, reading the review, it makes me even less convinced that Chris Conley was ever going to be able to be a true number one, number two receiver.
And I would agree with that. He just doesn't show the ability to create separation often enough to be a guy who should be targeted 7, 8, 9, 10 times a game. From what I saw, he generally speaking, outside of a few specific types of routes, he generally needs to be schemed open. And that can't be one of your go-to guys.
All right, I had a question before you came on. A request. I said I'd take requests. We'll just be a piano bar at this point. I'll play covers. And then some people wanted to know what you thought about the Chiefs quarterback situation behind Patrick Mahomes right now. The way the contracts are set up, Chad Henne is the guy. Behind him, with Chase Litton and Matt McGlynn. I wanted to call him McGloin. It is McGloin, not McGlynn. Too many McGs. It's McGloin and not McGlynn. I have McGlynn PTSD still. That was years
ago.
Now
I just feel like eating a McRib.
Oh, damn it. Wow. This segment brought to you, this particular question brought to you by McDonald's. They didn't say who gave the suggestion, not because they couldn't find that guy's name, but because this is actually this is some undercover viral marketing for McDonald's.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. It's really big for us.
So the backup quarterback situation, you know, Chad Henne is one of those guys where, like, when your team signs him to be a backup, my thought was, oh, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, sure. He's been in the league forever. He's seen a lot of stuff. He knows he's not here to start.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy where, you know, if he has to start a couple of games, you know, Henne's had some good games in his career. I've almost preferred McGloin at times, honestly. I feel like I've kind of liked some of the stuff he's done.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them are veteran guys who have been around a while, know what it's like to start, and so they're not going to panic if they need to. And so I'm perfectly fine with either of them. I'm not super thrilled about it. It's obviously not like when the Chiefs had Foles as their backup, where I felt super comfortable. I'd be about even to where how I felt with Chase Daniels, the backup, to where it's just kind of, it's okay. Now, the problem is the Chiefs starting quarterback situation has changed to where the team is clearly being built around the guy they have in place.
Right.
And so, you know, obviously if Mahomes gets hurt for longer than a couple games, it's like going to be a pretty rough gig. But I can see this offense led by Chad Henne being perfectly competent. And that's good enough for me.
Yeah, and for me at this point, I mean, if Mahomes gets hurt for any period of time, it's disastrous. I'm interested in Chase Litton because I think Andy Reid, even with Patrick Mahomes obviously being the guy, like in a tremendously incredible, 100% obvious way to leave absolutely no doubt there, I think Andy Reid would like to develop a guy. And
sure.
I think Litton has a better chance of doing that than McGloin does developing into something kind of interesting. They tried that with Tyler Bray, and I think that whole time, I think Andy Reid knew that Tyler Bray was never going to be the guy, but I think he likes having that option there, and then Henny's there for the middle.
Well, yeah, and you just never know what you might develop a guy into.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Litton, from everything I've heard, he can put some spin on the ball, and, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. You know, with quarterbacks, I gauge them a lot based on what I see in preseason, which I know is crazy because it's like the whole, oh, it's vanilla offense stuff. But to me, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Is like, this is when quarterbacks aren't schemed into victory. I want to see what they do on their own.
Last question for you, Seth. Did you know that the Chiefs have a defensive lineman named D. Liner?
I saw that. That is the greatest name. That is so wonderful. I hope he makes it because that is cool.
It's so great.
I enjoy that. That's like the guy that, like, remember when, well, no, of course you don't remember this. So a long time ago, Josh, Madden did not have nearly the AI that it has now.
Sure.
And so, like, you would literally draft dudes named, like, D-liner.
Sure, yes.
Like
yeah, of course. I listen, I'm not old, but I am poor, and so I've played older Madden games. Yeah, it made me so happy. I was afraid that I would see this, and then it would be like, D-liner, cornerback. And I was ready to be sad about it. But no, defensive tackle, D-liner, makes me so happy.
It's perfect.
It really
perfect.
Is. Seth, always great to talk to you. I'll hang up on you and then tell everybody where they can find all your stuff. Anything else you want to tease, though? Part 2 coming out. Reggie Ragland film review on the way?
That's correct. And then I'm going to try to squeeze in a couple more. And I think, I could be wrong, but I think I'm going to be able to attend training camp for a couple days here
nice.
Early on.
Fantastic.
And I might write up some reviews of what I see.
That'll be great. I will. I don't even know if I'm going to be scheduled at training camp. If you end up in St. Joe, I'll make the trek. I'll volunteer to come out to training camp. And
sounds good.
And I don't know. I want to be able to do the show on Facebook, but you're St. Joe. We're gonna have to work this out. It's all a headache for dudes.
St. Joe's is from Kansas City, honestly.
It's like an hour, right? Something
that's
about
nothing.
That. Yeah, I mean, I would complain about it, but you're coming from Minnesota, so I lose a little bit of my luster on that.
Yeah, that's true. I'm coming about 9 hours.
Oh, man, that's too much. It's practice, Seth. It's for dressed-up practice.
All right. I love what I do, man. And
sure.
If people want some reports on training camp, that's what they'll get.
If people want some reports on training camp, they can Venmo you gas money. That's what I would say. All right, Seth, we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great.
Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. You can read all of his stuff there. Go pay for The Athletic. Just do it. It's worth it. I do it. You should do it. Seth's stuff is great. Everything we talk about here. Why are you bouncing around, Beards?
I don't know. Just because.
Beards was bouncing. Did you do crack
vacation? No, I was just kicking my legs and it makes me bounce. I don't know.
You looked like a character in a fighting game that hadn't been, like, a Street Fighter character without being moved. Just fists up,
just
kind of bouncing
idle position.
Around. Yeah, your idling position. Yeah. It's also pouring rain here. And this
is
weird. This segment's 40 minutes because I can't ever stop talking to Seth. Go follow him on Twitter, @RealMNChiefsFan. I'm sure you're doing that already. But really, go read The Athletic. It's worth it. And go check out all of the stuff we talked about today. Also, everything coming up next week. We'll talk to Seth again on Tuesday.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I mean, we need to sell t-shirts.
We just
need to have t-shirts that we can sell.
Yes.
That's the thing.
I can do that, by the way. I can create a store pretty easy, I think. Sure. Problem is getting them sold.
All proceeds go to us.
Yeah.
Yes.
The charity of us.
100% of the profits.
Yeah.
110, actually.
Yes. We're going to steal from the company. The t-shirt company that makes it.
With Joshua Briscoe.
We're already stealing from this company.
Whoa!
On ESPN Kansas City.
In case you missed it earlier, today I went to the doctor and got a big allergy skin test to figure out exactly what I'm allergic to and how badly. And the thing about the allergy test that I thought was the most extraordinary is the fact that they test for allergies to cockroaches, which I didn't know was a thing you could be allergic to. But Dennis tweeted me and said, as a kid, I got the same test and found out I was allergic to two things, slight grass allergy and super allergic to cockroaches. At least it's provided me motivation to avoid places with them, not that I needed it. And this is part of why this is so funny to me.
Everybody's allergic to cockroaches. It's just some are actually physically allergic.
Like, this is why it's funny. So if you're allergic to dogs, you're like, oh, well, I can't go rub my face on this puppy until I have a whole pack of Benadryl in my pocket. Like,
in which case, you're in a coma and the dog is rubbing its face on you.
Right. Like, you've got to prepare for a good old puppy hangout sesh. And if you're allergic to cockroaches, then you just keep not cuddling cockroaches, I guess, right? I guess, like, if the problem is, like, cockroach poop or whatever, then anywhere around a cockroach is bad news for you and your allergies, and I get that. But I find that extremely funny. Also, my favorite response to my tweet about not being allergic to cockroaches was, that's no way to talk about Beards and Charlie.
Boo.
I thought it was pretty funny.
It was funny, but also mean. My feelings are hurt now.
Funny and mean is, we're kind of about that. Also, you want to know something that gave me a really interesting, like, conflict of emotions?
Not really, but go ahead.
In, like, back-to-back days, I watched David Letterman do an episode of My Next Guest Needs No Introduction with Howard Stern, and then, like, a day or two later, I went and saw the Mr. Rogers movie, and it was such an interesting,
split.
Collision, yeah, of two people and two styles that I really like enjoy and respect, and think, and leaving both of those going like, oh man, I need to be more like Howard Stern or Mr. Rogers. Wait a second, which one? And I think that's how I ended up how I am. I think that's the actual. I think that's the actual collision that I am now trying to claw out of. I can't decide what I can't decide what's the better way to be. This isn't a kid's show though, so that's helpful, I suppose, in figuring it out. And I also don't have the job security to be Howard Stern.
No, or the
I don't have
FCC
a job security
breathing down our neck.
Right, I don't have the job security to be Mr. Rogers. It's too nice. Anyway, we have very very little time left. So is it okay if we take another break here?
Yeah, that's fine.
Come back, and I have a Chiefs topic. So if you're sticking around for Chiefs topics, I've got another Chiefs topic for you. In fact, I got a handful. I'll just pick one during this break.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Alex Smith, by underthrowing that ball, turned a touchdown into a 50-50 ball.
With Joshua Briscoe.
And every time that happens this season, I'm going to pluck an eyelash out and just sacrifice to the eyelash gods. Because I guess that's the problem here. I don't know where I was going with that.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Every time Patrick Mahomes turns a 50-50 ball into a touchdown, I'm going to put on a set of eyelash extensions. I also don't know why that's the bit. A couple of Chiefs things, and then some of it we'll just get to as we get to it throughout the week. A bunch of these are evergreen, like evaluating the Chiefs draft haul and everything like that. And last week we talked a little bit about where the Chiefs fit in as far as a team and with the AFC West and with Patrick Mahomes. But Robert Klimko of Sports Illustrated, SI.com, came out with a power ranking. And I am not going to tell you every time a new power ranking comes out. That's not going to be a segment every 2 days, probably. But this one helped me realize an interesting point, because Klimko only did a top 16, okay? And we can talk about any of this, like, in any depth, and we won't go today too long because the show's almost over. Today's show went by fast. So did yesterday's. This has been a fast week so far. I'm going to give you 1 to 16, all right? Eagles, Patriots, Jaguars, Saints, Rams, Steelers, Falcons, Chargers, Niners, Packers, Chiefs, Vikings, Panthers, Titans, Cowboys, Seahawks. Here's what I want you to get from that. Chiefs at 11, I think is interesting and also fair. But in the top 16, there are 6 AFC teams. 6 AFC, 10 NFC. I think that's fair. Also, I think the Titans are too high, and I would bring the Texans into this. So I would swap out the Titans and the Texans. But here's the actual thing about this. When you look at how the AFC is built up, the Patriots and Steelers are winning their divisions, right? The AFC East is not getting a wild card team. If you think the AFC North is, I'd like to know who you think is going to do it. Is it going to be Andy Dalton or Joe Flacco or Lamar Jackson coming in for Joe Flacco who gets hurt in week 2 or the Browns? Those divisions aren't getting a wild card team. Whatever you think about the AFC South, I've got questions about Blake Bortles. I've got questions about the Jaguars. I've said made all those questions very loudly. My questions are about the Jags, by the way, are why are you still paying Blake Bortles and why are you going to pay him $20 million next year? The Jags will win the division this year because they're not paying Bortles $20 million until next year when I think things are going to get a little, they're going to have to start tightening their belts a little bit more. But it's fine. Their defense is insane. They have 2 starting defenses and no starting quarterback. But then the AFC South is fascinating because the Titans made the playoffs last year and they're higher here on this power ranking. But the Texans have the best pass rusher of those two teams and maybe the 2 best pass rushers of those teams. And Deshaun Watson. And then the Colts, who are a bad football team, they're potentially getting back the essence of Andrew Luck. Now, there might be a 25% chance of this, but if they get back the Andrew Luck, then I think that could be a French playoff team. The Broncos are not a playoff contender. The Raiders, for my money, are not a playoff contender, but they're probably a playoff contender as much as the Colts are. So that's fine. But so you give just a 10% chance to the Colts, maybe a 20% chance to the Raiders, and then you have, and let's just give the Chargers the division. I'm not actually doing that, but for this conversation, let's give the Chargers the division. Now, there are two wild card spots in the AFC. And building off the power rankings from Klimko and what we actually know about the AFC, these two wild card spots are going to go to one of those AFC South teams and the Chiefs. The Chiefs are going to make the playoffs this year. Like, the more that I actually, like, look into all of this, the more convinced I am. And I know that's dangerous. Like, I know I'm setting myself up for some sort of failure here. But unless you have the AFC South getting three teams in, I think that the Chiefs and Chargers are both making the playoffs. And if the Colts are any sort of decent, and if the Titans and Texans beat up on each other, and maybe the Colts, Titans, and Texans all beat up on each other a little bit, you're not getting three teams into the playoffs. Especially if the Jags crush. Now, if everybody in there is, you know, 10-6-ish, if the Jags are 10-6 and that lets the Titans be 9-7 and the Texans be 8-8, or the Texans be 9-7, then maybe you got something there. But if the Jags are just crushing, right? Let's say the Jags go 13-3 this year. They just crush their division. And then the Texans and Titans, one of those teams ends up going 10-6. There are too many wins already gone from that division for, say, the Titans or the Texans, whichever one doesn't make it. I want it to be the Texans. There are too many wins in that division already given out. The Texans and Jags have already beaten the Titans too many times. The Titans aren't a good enough team to do this. So maybe the last spot to be determined in this playoff race for you is the Chiefs or maybe the Chargers. But we'll make it the Chiefs just for the sake of, I want to be pessimistic here. Go ahead and say the Chiefs are the last team to get in your playoff sketchup here. They're still in. Because if the AFC South isn't getting another team, they're not getting three teams, which is very difficult to do. The Chiefs would have to be a bad football team this year to have the AFC South let that happen. Or make that happen, I guess. The Chiefs are getting a playoff spot. Now, I'll continue to make the case that the Chiefs have an extremely good case to be made for winning the division. We got lots of time for that. But where I went after reading this power ranking on SA.com from Robert Klimko, which is an interesting power ranking in a bunch of different places, and like having the Chiefs one spot ahead of the Vikings, I find fascinating. And not insane, but fascinating. And one spot behind the Packers, which is a spot behind the 49ers. Lots of this. Very interesting. Chargers at 8. But even if you're pessimistic, and even if you think that the Chiefs are the second best team in the AFC West, it's really hard to keep them out of the playoffs. For you to do that, you have to either have the AFC South getting three teams in, or the Raiders being good this year, which is plausible. I could see it happening, but I'd be a little surprised. I'm not going to predict it, certainly. Or you think that one of the other AFC North teams are going, or an AFC East team, is going to demand actual respect for a playoff berth. So Josh Allen or Sam Darnold or Ryan Tannehill is going to carry a team to a playoff berth. Or Baker Mayfield or Joe Flacco or Andy Dalton is going to. I'd rather have a team led by Patrick Mahomes over any of those, and Mahomes has the better surrounding talent, certainly. Also, I really like Baker Mayfield, so I did hesitate for a second there. Because I can't help it. But I'd rather have Patrick Mahomes, and I'd rather have his surrounding weapons. And if there was a total round-robin schedule set up, then maybe the AFC South has a couple teams that would push you out of it. But I don't think they're going to. In fact, I think the Chiefs are a better team than the Titans right now. I think they might be a better team than the Texans. It's a long way of me saying the Chiefs are going to make the playoffs this year. You might as well get used to saying it. Talk to you again tomorrow. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.